back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20.
Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Finds the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes, Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us this morning with you for the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Football Giants. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You could also chime in on the conversation via Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat, and you can follow and interact directly with me at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. So on Wednesday, we spent a great deal of the program focusing on the running game for the New York Giants, as well as the running game throughout the course of the NFC East. And what I want to do on today's program is shift gears to the wide receiver core, as that is the goal moving forward over these next few weeks, building up towards training camp, really examining position by position, but not just with respect to the Giants, how the Giants stack up against what the other teams in the division did, such as the Eagles, Redskins, and Cowboys. So we'll get into that over the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. And if you want to talk about anything else in particular, for example, yesterday we also got into starting the speculation about what the record would be for the New York Giants. If you have questions about other positions, what came out of OTAs, what came out of minicamp, everything is up for debate, everything is up for discussion here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. So let's start at least with the receiving core for the New York Giants. And Hakeem Nix left via free agency, signed with the Indianapolis Colts. So that is the biggest void that the Giants are going to have to fill heading into this season. Victor Cruz is back, and he signed a long-term extension. So they have him as the core leader to this receiving group. And now really this season comes down to me, not so much about Odell Beckham Jr. I know a lot of the focus, a lot of the storylines is going to really hone in on him because he's a first round pick, 12th overall. But the key to me for this receiving core is Reuben Randall, because Randall has plenty of experience now under his belt. He understands what it takes to digest an offensive playbook. He's had a season or two working with Eli Manning, and I understand he's now learning a new offense all over again compared to what he had to go through with Kevin Gilbride. But if you listen to what Reuben Randall had to say over the course of this offseason thus far, he is animated, he's excited, because he feels this offense is a little bit easier on the wide receivers, where there's not as much reading during the course of the route. It's you have your route, you're on the same page with the quarterback, and as long as those two connect and read each other well, they should be able to flourish. But Randall has a golden opportunity, and that is because Hakeem Nix is no longer in the picture. And right now, as we head into training camp, if I was to go through the depth chart, you'd have Victor Cruz and Reuben Randall as your 1-2 punch at that receiving core. Odell Beckham Jr. is certainly in the mix, and he has taken part in minicamp and some OTAs. He was dealing with a hamstring injury, so that kept him on the sideline, but he's been in meetings, and he has been able to get reps with Ryan Nassib, Painter, Manning, you name it. So that's at least a positive, but he's really going to have an opportunity to show what he can bring to the table once training camp starts. But to me, if I was to pick one wide receiver that is going to define this group, it would be Reuben Randall. You know what you're going to get out of Victor Cruz, regardless of this new offense. And Victor Cruz has had a few seasons under his belt where he and Eli Manning have been on the same page. Last season wasn't necessarily as crisp as it was in previous seasons, but as long as Eli Manning gets protection, the deep ball is going to be there. And I think this new offense is actually going to help out Victor Cruz, because he's the type of guy, as we discussed in great detail yesterday, just like the running backs, if you get a short pass to Victor Cruz and you give him blocking up the field, he's the type of guy that can use his speed to turn a 3 or 4 yard pass into a 25 to 30 yard gain. So this offense is going to give him options in the short yardage situations as well as in the deep yardage situations, and that should wreak havoc on opposing defenses because Victor Cruz is the type of guy that doesn't necessarily need to rely on the 50 yard bomb to get into the flow of the game. That's what's great about a guy like Victor Cruz. Reuben Randall is more of your guy that's going to be that vertical threat, but under this offense, there's also going to be opportunities over the middle of the field and in short yardage situations. But Randall really is the guy that can blossom in this offense. And this offense is going to rely on a variety of different wide receivers, a variety of different schemes. And I don't like to compare the Green Bay Packers system to the Giants this year, saying, oh, well, whatever Green Bay did is going to be basically a duplication of what the Giants are going to do. Now, that would be a too simplistic answer to give you to say they're just going to mimic. And even when Ben McAdoo spoke to the reporters for the first time, he said, hey, there's going to be some Green Bay principles. There's going to be some principles that I like, and there's going to be some of the old Giants principles, and it's going to basically be a mix. But most important, they're going to play off of the strengths of the players. Just because Green Bay ran XYZ regarding their receiving core, they had Randall Cobb, they had Jordy Nelson, they had JerMichael Finley, they had Andrew Corliss, they had Eddie Lacy. It's a different personnel group here with the Giants. That doesn't mean that the Giants don't have a personnel grouping that can mimic what Green Bay did, but let's not forget that Aaron Rodgers is a mobile quarterback, and Eli Manning doesn't necessarily offer that. So there's certain things that Green Bay could do because of Aaron Rodgers' versatility, and there's certain things that the Giants are going to be able to do because of what Eli Manning brings to the table. But there's also going to be things that are going to be different. So to say, oh, well, Green Bay ran this more often than not, they used John Kuhn out of the fullback spot. Listen, we could sit here all day long and break down every single one of those schemes, but I think there is going to be some differentiation between the Green Bay Packers and the New York Giants. So over the next couple of weeks, if you're going to sit in front of your television and watch every Green Bay Packer game on rewind, anticipating what the Giants are going to do, hey, that's great, and that'll fill up some time, but I think there's going to be some new wrinkles that the Giants are going to bring to the table. And one in particular that has stood out to me during the course of OTAs and minicamp. And, you know, John Schmelk and I have joked back and forth over the last few weeks. I'm very high on Trindon Holliday. And I'm not saying that from a special teams perspective. I'm high on Trindon Holliday from a receiving perspective. Because I think that they're going to have certain plays where they're going to try to get four wide receivers on the field. And Holiday's going to be that fourth guy. And whether it be a screen play, whether it be an end-around, whether it be something, they're going to look to get Trindon Holliday out in open space. Why? Because the guy's got speed. If he can do it on a return, you can't hurt yourself if you try to infuse that into the passing game. And I think that is one player in particular who has been primarily known as a special teams return guy. If you look at Trindon Holliday's stats, he's only had two receptions over the course of his career. That came in 2012 with the Denver Broncos. Why not try to catch the opposition off guard? The Eagles are going to have a mix of LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles right now. And those are small guys, shifty guys, fast guys. But those guys are going to be able to turn the tables on offense. No reason why the Giants can't throw something new out there. In terms of the rest of the receiving core, Jarrell Jernigan, the big storyline for him was the last three games of the season in 2013 a tease, or was it a sign of what he could bring to the table? That's going to be the biggest storyline to watch regarding Jarrell Jernigan. But there's no guarantee that he's going to make this roster. He needs to continue to prove that he can be a consistent weapon and he can develop. That's also a big key for Jarrell Jernigan. Mario Manningham spoke to reporters during minicamp July 21st. That is the date that he has circled on his calendar. And that is the date that he wants to get back on the field and he wants to get back in the mix. He has been sidelined because of his recovery from multiple knee surgeries. This one is not necessarily the ACL recovery. This is more a scope that he had after the ACL procedure. But one way or another, the goal is Manningham's got to get out on the field and he has to start making plays. And then the Giants can assess what he is going to bring to the table. So Randall Cruz, 1-2. Odell Beckham Jr., very much in the mix of that third spot, as well as Mario Manningham. And then Jarrell Jernigan is right behind that tier. and you have Trindon Holliday, but Trindon Holliday doesn't necessarily have to worry about making the roster as a wide receiver. He can become either the kickoff or the punt return specialist. However, in addition to that, he could bring something to the table as a wide receiver. And the one thing that will solidify a roster spot out of that 53-man group is if you can be a dual threat. You could be a receiver. You could also be a special team guy. You could be a running back. You could also be a special team guy. You could be a running back. You could be a special team return guy and so forth. The list goes on and on. Same thing with a linebacker or a defensive end who may be third or fourth on the list. If you can contribute to special teams, that is the quickest way to get on this roster. A couple of other wide receiver names to throw out there, because I know a lot of you who are passionate and you like to look at the depth chart. You have Corey Washington, who is an undrafted rookie, a big guy in terms of the height department at 6'4". Julian Talley has been on this roster in recent years, so he is certainly familiar with the coaching staff, familiar with the personnel. They're bringing him in as well. You have Marcus Harris, who's looked pretty good in OTAs and minicamps. He's gotten a lot of reps. This is going to be an opportunity for him out of Murray State. And then Preston Parker and Travis Harvey round out the receiving group. So that is what the receiving core looks like with respect to the New York Giants. We'll get into the Eagles. We'll get into the Redskins. We'll get into the Cowboys. Your thoughts on the Giants depth chart. Who do you think needs to make the biggest statement during the course of training camp? Who is going to be the wild card? Who is going to be a player that maybe a lot of people are not talking about that will certainly emerge out of that group? So we'll get into the gist of that on Twitter, hashtag Giants chat, on the phones, 201-939-4513. And you can certainly follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We'll also be monitoring your tweets throughout the course of this program. So certainly a lot to get into here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Thursday's edition on Giants.com. So glad you can take part on the conversation this morning. Let's open up those phone lines, and we start with Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, what's happening?
Nothing. I got a question. Will the Giants win 15 games in 2014?
Well, 15 games, I think, is a big reach, Tim, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for the question this morning. A lot of people were throwing out 10, 11 wins, which I think is a fair barometer. Very difficult to win 15 games in the National Football League. And you could throw out a few teams who have had an opportunity to get to 15. But remember, at the end of the day, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11. We could throw out all the numbers here and there. The goal is just make the playoffs. Just get in. And the Giants are the best example of that. In 2011, we're talking about a team that was hovering around 500. 7-7, remember, entering the final two games of the season. And then things started to click. OCU Mignora comes back. The defense starts to really come together. They get in, and then they ride that all the way to the Super Bowl. So I understand for the fan base perspective, it's nice to say, hey, we have that beautiful 13-3 record, 14-2, 12-4. Just get in. That's the goal. It doesn't matter whether you get in with 9 wins, you get in with 10, you get in with 11. All you need to do is get in the tournament. If you're one of the 6 teams, you're taking a step in the right direction. And compared to what has happened over the last few seasons, getting in the postseason would be a big stride for the Giants. You know, the Giants are not the type of team, even if you go back over the last few years based on the standings, they're not the type of team that runs away in the standings. They're a team that stays competitive, but it comes down to the wire. You'd have to go back to that 2008 season where the Giants really ran away with things. And if you recall, they had that loss on Monday Night Football to the Cleveland Browns. Outside of that, there weren't too many blemishes on the record. But at the end of the day, what good did that do them? They wound up being ousted by the Eagles in the first round. So what you do in the regular season is important. Don't get me wrong. I'm not one to say the regular season is meaningless and 9 wins, 12 wins, who cares? No, you want to build consistency. You want to build camaraderie. And you want to build momentum because, as the Giants have also showed, if you click at the right time late in the season, you can carry that over into the playoffs. So regular season is extremely important, and it goes without saying that each and every game in the NFL season is critical because there's so few games and so few teams that make the playoffs. But to say that the Giants need to win 14 games to get respect and be considered a powerhouse in the NFL, that to me is a little ridiculous. So, you know, 15 wins, 14 wins, 10-11 is a fair barometer for the Giants. And that is a fair goal for the Giants. And you also need to take into consideration how competitive and how dangerous the division they play in is. And the NFC East, unlike any other division, beats each other up. And the Giants faithful knows that better than anybody else. It's very difficult to pull off sweeps in this division. And this is the other thing to keep in mind with respect to the NFC East this season, more so than any other season. You have the Redskins implementing a brand new offense. Jay Gruden, their new head coach, the former offensive coordinator of the Bengals, he's now bringing his new wrinkle to the table. So that's going to be new. The Giants, they have a brand new offense. And they've added new players pretty much all across the board. The Giants, if you look over the rosters with the Redskins, the Eagles, and the Cowboys, they have revamped their roster more so than any other team. That doesn't mean that the other teams haven't made changes. But you take the Giants' roster changes into consideration. You take their new offense into consideration. You take the Redskins' new offense into consideration. The Cowboys have a new defensive coordinator in Rod Marinelli. However, he did serve under Monty Kiffin, their old defensive coordinator. But that doesn't mean that things are not going to change a little bit. Every new defensive coordinator always likes to add his new wrinkle into the play. And then you take into consideration the Philadelphia Eagles, Chip Kelly, the addition of Darren Sproles. This is now their second year under Bill Davis, who took over as defensive coordinator last season. There's a lot of changes, a lot of turnover in this division, and that makes it that much more difficult to read and know your opponent that well. That's why the NFC East is so difficult to conquer. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's head back to the phone lines, and we've got Ernest in Connecticut. Ernest, what's happening?
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing well, Ernest. Good to hear from you. How's everything?
Fine. There's a couple of questions that I want to ask. Do you think that JPP will be his old self this year after going through, you know, the surgeries and everything and healthy? Do you think that he'll get back to full form and, you know, do what JPP does? And another thing is, do you think that the offensive line is secure, well, as of right now? Do you think that it's a better offensive line than they had last year, or is that to be seen? And do you think that David Wilson will ever take over the full-time running back job? Once contact is made and he can withstand the hits, do you think that he'll ever, you know, get that job back again?
Well, Ernest, let's start with the last question that you asked, which was about David Wilson. I think the Giants' goal is that they're probably going to move more towards a running back by committee, and Rashad Jennings, I think, is going to be the number one workhorse. Down the road, if somebody leaves via free agency, could David Wilson take back that number one job? Absolutely. But considering the severity of the neck injury, I think the goal for the Giants is preservation when it comes to David Wilson. And I'm not saying that he's only going to be a complimentary back for the rest of his career, but I don't think he's going to be a player that is going to get 25 to 30 carries a game. And you can make the argument that very few running backs in this league now, based on how running games are structured, are in the ballpark of 25 to 30 carries. So I think he's going to be part of a two-back committee at worst, and he's going to be that change-of-pace type of back moving forward. So I don't envision him being that workhorse for the rest of his career.
Okay.
With respect to the offensive line question, Ernest, you asked, do I feel the offensive line is in a better position right now compared to what the Giants threw out there last year? And I would say absolutely, because I think that with what they addressed via free agency, they've at least improved the interior of the line, where most of the question marks laid last season. You brought in Jeff Schwartz at the left guard spot, and he's going to solidify that spot compared to a game of musical chairs last year where they had Kevin Booth in there at points, but they also utilized other offensive linemen. And Schwartz was one of the top interior offensive linemen on the market coming over from Kansas City. There are still question marks at center. Don't get me wrong. J.D. Walton has been plagued by injuries during the course of his career, but the positive is he stayed relatively healthy during the course of minicamp and OTAs, and you drafted Weston Richburg to play behind him. They're also using him at guard, so they're getting him prepared in case there's an injury on the interior, and you also have plenty of experience that he brings to the table in college at the center spot. Right tackle, you're secure with Justin Pugh, and he's coming off a very strong rookie campaign. So that leaves two question marks to me, Ernest. You've got the right guard spot, and you got the left tackle spot. That's two questions compared to last season, keep in mind, Ernest, where there were more than two questions heading into every game because you didn't know who was going to last over the course of four quarters, given how brittle and injury-plagued this offensive line was. Will Beattie is healthy. He comes back to full form. I don't think there's as many question marks at left tackle because you would assume that with full health, and with Jeff Schwartz playing next to him each and every game, he's going to feel a little bit more comfortable and there's going to be stability on the left side of the line. Chris Snee, you're talking about elbows, you're talking about hip. He's been beaten up over the course of his career. It's not a surprise. That's what happens when you log as many years. The positive is they have been throwing in Brandon Mosley during OTAs and minicamp there. So if Snee's not ready to go, Mosley has taken a bulk of the reps. And when healthy, I thought he played very well last season. The problem is he broke his hand against the Lions, and that obviously stunted his growth. And if you look back since he came into the league in 2012, he really hasn't had as many reps as some of these other younger offensive linemen. So you have a little bit more depth than you had last year. You have Charles Brown at left tackle. You have Jerry, assuming he comes back healthy during training camp. So in terms of the starting five that I have penciled in week one and the depth behind them, I would say they absolutely look much better than they were last season.
Okay. All right. And JPP, you think he's going to – you think he'll be, you know, his old self now that he's 100% or –
Well, health is important for anybody, and I just mentioned Will Beattie, Ernest. Will Beattie, part of his struggles had nothing to do with health, but other parts of the struggles, I think, had to do with health. So when a guy is ready to go and he's able to take part in practices and he gets through training camp, and remember, JPP was limited in training camp last year, you know, that should help him return to full form. However, a lot of it is also going to depend on what JPP is going to do to add to his arsenal of moves, meaning how is he going to deal with double teams, how is he going to deal with some new offensive linemen in the NFC East. But to look at it from the big picture perspective, he's healthy. I think his numbers should improve. And I think that quality play from the defensive tackle spot, such as Cullen Jenkins and Jonathan Hankins, assuming they're out there for a 16-game stretch, that should also help boost his numbers. But I'll leave you with this, Ernest. Do not get caught up in sacks. And I think as fans, as so-called experts, all anybody does when they determine how effective a defensive lineman is, specifically an end, is how many sacks did the guy have? It's not all about the sacks. It's about the quarterback hits. It's about the hurries. It's about the pass rushes. It's about getting in the face of the quarterback. So let's see JPP at least do that consistently, as opposed to saying throughout the first 5 weeks of the season, if he doesn't have five sacks, he's not going to have a good season.
Right, right. I understand that. Okay, then. All right. All right. Thank you.
You got it, Ernest. Appreciate the phone call. Have a good morning. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. We'll also get into the receiving corps for the rest of the division. I promise you that before we wrap up. In the meantime, let's head back to the lines. We got Derek in the ATL. Derek, what's happening?
Good morning, Lance.
Good morning to you, Derek. What you got?
Hey, I missed the first 5 minutes of the show. I didn't know whether you broke. I heard you starting to talk about a couple of the rookies.
Well, that's unacceptable, first of all, Derek. You know, you can't do this consistently. You're killing me here.
Well, I was booting on my laptop, you know.
I'm just giving you a hard time. No worries. So, I'm sorry. What did you think that I may have addressed?
I wanted to know, do you think any of these rookie guys that we have wide receivers in camp, you think they are in, any of them could break into the as a backup, or do you see any of them making the practice squad?
Well, that's a great question, and I did touch on that briefly at the beginning of the show. In terms of the young guys, if I was to pick one guy, and remember, from what I saw during OTAs and minicamps, the pads are not on. There's only so much you can read into it. Corey Washington is intriguing because of, I know, the old phrase that we throw out on this program, the height situation. He does have the ability to get up, win those battles man-to-man on corners. So he's the undrafted rookie out of Newberry, 6'4", 200. Corey Washington would be one guy I would keep close tabs on. And then the other guy that I would throw in there, but he's got at least a year under his belt, is Marcus Harris out of Murray State. A little bit smaller. Those are the two that I think perhaps could make some noise and have an opportunity to get on the roster if, for example, Manningham's not healthy and Jarrell Jernigan just does not show continued development. But past that, I wouldn't expect another Victor Cruz to come out of nowhere. I'll tell you that.
Was Julian Talley on our practice squad last year?
Julian Talley on the practice squad. I don't believe – was he on the – yes, he was on the practice squad. I didn't recall, so I had to look to my experts next to me. Yes, Talley was on the practice squad. He's been so on and off this roster, it's hard to keep tabs. But, yes, to answer your question, yeah, he was on the practice squad.
Well, I'm intrigued with the speed and the versatility of Beckham with Cruz in this lineup. And it's going to be the shiftiness that Cruz has and the shiftiness that Beckham has. I'm kind of excited to see what they do out there in preseason and in regular games.
Well, I'm also excited to see how Ben McAdoo utilizes them as a group, how he rotates the unit, because, you know, we get caught up, Derek, a lot in this is going to be the number two wide receiver, this is going to be the number two, the number three, and so forth. If he winds up utilizing a lot of 3-4 wide receiver sets, at the end of the day, it's not going to make a difference what the depth chart looks like. All it's going to matter is that there's consistency from that unit.
Right.
It looks like we lost Derek. Derek, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's get a look at some of your tweets before we head back to the phone lines. Josh Dunn at Dunny Villain. Any real chance that wide receivers like Adams, referring to Chris Adams or Jarrell Jernigan, make our final roster? Also, who has the best wide receiver core in the NFC East? Well, Chris Adams was injured waived, so that was his situation. Then he was brought back on the roster, and he is now on reserve injured. So I don't know what type of an impact Chris Adams is ultimately going to make. I would put him as a long shot to even make the roster. With respect to Jernigan, as I touched on a bit earlier in the program, Jernigan showed a lot over the last few games, and the one quote that I'll always remember from John Mara's postseason press conference is, why did it take so long to discover what Jarrell Jernigan could do? Now, in fairness, Tom Coughlin throughout, well, you have to take into consideration the fact that Jernigan battled injuries very early in his career. So what happens when you deal with injuries? It's the same thing with guys like DeMontre Moore. You're not on the field. You miss the preseason. The coaches can't evaluate you. So that was the issue with Jarrell Jernigan. He was also playing behind a number of other proven wide receivers and did not see many opportunities on the field. However, because of the injuries last season, he had a door that opened for him. And late in the season, he took advantage of that. And there was consistency. So we do have a stretch of games where we could say, okay, hey, this is what Jernigan could bring to the table. However, with that being said, that was under Kevin Gilbride's offense. Now it's a whole new offense. So the evaluation period, to me, begins all over again. And you have additional competition with Manningham back and Odell Beckham Jr. in the mix, two guys that can be utilized in similar spots that Jernigan plays. Jernigan has an opportunity because he also plays special teams, but he's no lock. You know, just like Jayron Hosley's no lock at the corner spot. I would put both of those players in the same area where they've had opportunities, but they've also dealt with injuries. Now the writing is starting to appear on the wall, and you have additional competition. With respect to who has the best receiving core in the NFC East, I liked what the Washington Redskins did this offseason in terms of depth. Pierre Garçon had always been the guy, and then they utilized the tight end, whether it be Fred Davis or so forth, or Jordan Reed, the young tight end who got hurt and was dealing with a concussion late last season. Now you have Pierre Garçon, You have DeSean Jackson, who they got after the Eagles waived him. And you also have Andre Roberts, who was brought over from the Arizona Cardinals, who was a very productive wide receiver to complement Larry Fitzgerald. So you have three guys that are proven. And then you add Jordan Reed into the mix. And I don't want to necessarily take into consideration the tight ends. I'm just throwing it out there because the Redskins do utilize their tight ends more so than most teams in the NFL because they didn't really have a deep receiving core. This year, you've got three guys that RG3 can turn to. Behind that, Santana Moss would be the next guy. But you know what? Santana Moss is your fourth wide receiver. That's not a bad situation. So Washington, to me, is a team that I thought did a nice job in the offseason improving their receiving core. Philadelphia loses DeSean Jackson, so there's going to be a hole to fill. But Philadelphia, as we've seen in seasons past, they have just five or six guys that they rotate in and out. Riley Cooper's coming off a great year. We'll see whether or not he can pick up where he left off now that DeSean Jackson is not there. Jeremy Maclin coming off the torn ACL. They re-signed him. Then you have Jordan Matthews, who they drafted out of Vanderbilt, who's a proven wide receiver in college who will look to add some depth. But I think losing DeSean Jackson brings some question marks to the table regarding their receiving core. So I would say the Redskins have more depth than Philadelphia on paper. With respect to Dallas, Dez Bryant really came into his own. Miles Austin, they finally parted ways with him, given all of his hamstring issues. After Dez Bryant, Dallas is really in the evaluation period. Terrence Williams, who was the rookie last year, had his fair share of ups and downs out of Baylor, where he had a good game, and then he had a bad game. If you recall, in week one against the Giants, he had a game where his miscue led to an interception that Tony Romo threw up the left sideline. And then if DeMarco Murray didn't pull off the tackle, the Giants probably get in the end zone very early in that game. And who knows, they probably could win that game because Dallas held off the Giants in the final few minutes. That's certainly the game of coulda, woulda, shoulda. Dallas jumped out to a very big lead because of all the Giants' turnovers, but there were a couple of game-changing opportunities for the Giants. They were not able to take advantage of that. But getting back to the topic at hand, Dallas and Philadelphia doesn't have, to me, nearly as much depth as Washington. And then you look at the Giants. The Giants are bringing back Victor Cruz, but behind Victor Cruz, you know, Reuben Randall flashes here or there. Odell Beckham Jr., he's a rookie. Manningham, the injury. A lot of question marks. So, to me, if I was to rank it just based on depth, I would give Washington the edge at number one. I would put Philadelphia at number two. And the Giants right now are in that 3-4 barometer when you look at the depth on paper because there's a lot more question marks than there are guarantees. So, Dallas, Dez Bryant, behind him, a lot of question marks. The Giants, after Victor Cruz, a lot of question marks. However, you know, Reuben Randall has at least shown you a little bit more than Terrence Williams, so you'd put the Giants three and the Cowboys four. That's at least how I see it from the depth perspective, and that's really the only way to evaluate this group at this point, given the fact that we don't know how injuries are going to play out. A lot of these teams are still implementing some of their new offensive schemes, but Washington, Redskins, and Pierre Garçon had done plenty of damage last year. Now, with the compliments he has around him, that could be a very scary passing attack. And Jay Gruden, if you look at what he has utilized in his days with the Bengals, Cincinnati had one of the best passing games last season because it wasn't just A.J. Green. Had a ton of players. Andy Dalton's not the great postseason quarterback, but during the regular season, made a number of big plays. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Zach in New Jersey. Zach, what's happening?
Hello, Lance. Good to be on the show. First-time caller.
Good to have you aboard, Zach. What's on your mind?
Feelings I was thinking about. How there's a lot of things that could possibly click this year. We've made a bunch of acquisitions during the offseason, such as Holiday and Cromartie and draft picks with Beckham. I think that this could possibly be our year, that everything just comes together, and I think we make another magical run.
Well, the Giants' defense has come together. I think the offense is still in that learning curve because Eli Manning and company are still digesting it. There's question marks, at least in the receiving core, as I mentioned. We don't know who the tight end is going to be that's going to emerge. But to get back to your point, Zach, I think the defense, the fact that they brought in a lot of proven veterans, they have more depth specifically in the secondary than they've had in recent history. If that defense comes to play, and if we see an eighth-ranked defense, which is where they finished overall over the course of 16 games as opposed to over the course of 7 games, you know, this is going to take the pressure off of the offense, and they're going to be a more consistent group that, you're right, could click and could show signs of consistency game in and game out. So I think the defense, to me, is what is going to dictate the tone of this season more so than the offense.
Definitely. I agree with you there. And before, you're talking about little wild cards that could possibly like sneak into the roster. Cornerback Bennett Jackson that they drafted from Notre Dame, he actually went to the high school that I go to in Hazlitt, small town New Jersey. I saw Will Hill, who had he got suspended 4 games, and Hosley was hurt, I think.
Well, Hill is no longer on the team. The Giants parted ways with him. Mm-hmm. And it was it was going to be a 6-game suspension, so it was going to be a pretty lengthier suspension.
Yeah, but I think that he has maybe has a chance to just sneak into the roster.
You're talking about Jaron Hosley?
Yeah, no, Bennett Jackson, they drafted him.
Bennett Jackson, it's going to be tough because there's a lot of other corners in front of him. You at least need to, you know, take that into consideration. I think that there's upside. I could see him perhaps be put on the practice squad if they're able to retain his rights as somebody that could add depth later down the road. But here's the way I look at it in terms of the numbers game, Zach, and this is why it's going to be very difficult for Bennett Jackson. You're looking at Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, Prince Amukamara, Walter Thurman. Those are your 1-2-3 wideouts, Thurman being the nickel slot corner. Then behind him, you have a lot of players that have already contributed to this team. You have Charles James, who was thrown out there. You have Tremaine McBride. You have Jaron Hosley, who you mentioned. Zach Bowman, who to me has had an excellent camp and can also contribute on special teams. I named 3 other players after the 3 starters. So that's 6. There's no way they're keeping 7 corners. There's no guarantee they're even going to keep 6. So it's going to be very difficult for Bennett Jackson to make this team. And it's nothing against him from a talent perspective. It's just a numbers game. That's the unfortunate circumstance.
Okay, I got you.
Well, Zach, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in this morning.
Oh, thank you.
Zach in New Jersey weighing in. You as well at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. You can follow and interact with me. Let's get to some of your tweets. I know a number of you listening to the program can't get to the phone, so let's take a look at what you have been responding to regarding what we have thrown out there. Avery at TQ Man AF. Earlier in the show, we were talking about wins and losses for the Giants because Tim had asked whether or not the Giants are going to win 15 games. Avery writes, yes, just get into the playoffs. Whatever the regular season record, look what happened to New England, who went undefeated in 2007. Look at what happened to the Green Bay Packers, too. Green Bay that season losing that one game to Kansas City, and the Giants nearly knocked them off at MetLife Stadium. It's great to win 15, 14 games in a season. As Avery mentioned, it's great to go unbeaten in the regular season, but it doesn't guarantee you postseason success. And I guess the old debate is, and you can ask this to Patriots fans, would you rather go 15-1 or 16-0 and lose the Super Bowl, or go 10-6 or 9-7 and win the Super Bowl? And I'm sure everyone would take 10-6 and 9-7. Why? Because you don't win any awards for a 14 or a 15 win season. It looks nice in the archives when you're going through year by year, season by season record. It looks great. But in this day and age, it's all about the hardware. It's all about what you can bring to the table in the postseason. Consistency is important. And I'm not talking about individual players. Trust me, I do not want to get back to the Eli Manning debate. We spent enough time on that. I'm talking about teams now. I want to clarify that in terms of teams being consistent. It's nice to have a stretch of seasons where you can win between 12 and 14 games. And there's some teams that have been able to do that. But a team would take a Super Bowl in the mix if that meant one season winning 9 games or just backing in. And in recent history, a lot of teams that have gotten those wild cards, keep in mind, have done well. The Green Bay Packers, Wild card. The Pittsburgh Steelers, wild card. The New York Giants, wild card. How about the Baltimore Ravens? A lot of teams that just got in, got hot, and wound up winning a Super Bowl. So if you're going to go based on the trends, winning the division, having the best record in your respective conference, does not guarantee you anything when it comes to the playoffs. Let's take a look at some of the other tweets that are coming in throughout the course of the program. Anthony in Phoenix at ABR127. Our receivers will surprise other teams. Cruz, Randall, Beckham, Jernigan, Holiday, Manningham. Mix and match will frustrate the secondary. And Anthony, I agree with you. On paper, they have the intangibles, but the way I'm ranking things right now, I'm going based on proven commodities versus question marks. And in all fairness, when you look at the Giants compared to some of these other receiving cores, I think Washington right now has less questions than perhaps what the Giants would bring to the table. So it's only fair to look at it from the big picture perspective. But as Anthony mentioned, you look at the depth, you look at potential, you look at upside, you look at Trindon Holiday. Yes, Giants have a lot of guys that Ben McAdoo could lick his chops over and say, hey, I could get creative. I could dig deep into my bag of tricks and we could catch some of these defenses off guard. Absolutely. Because a guy like Trindon Holiday, for example, he'll be a nightmare for a linebacker if they even want to think about putting a linebacker up against him. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. Let's continue to scroll through your tweets. Mike Farmer, as I mentioned, show's not complete without a Mike Farmer tweet. Is Tom Coughlin going to change his outlook on rookie second, third-year guys and give them more chances to play, given the owner's comments? And Mike is alluding to Jarrell Jernigan's comment that John Mara threw out about how, you know, why do we have to wait 3 or 4 years in to discover that there's some potential? And it's a great question. I actually touched on this briefly yesterday, mainly because a number of you had started having a conversation amongst yourselves on our Big Blue Kickoff page off of Giants.com. By the way, it's Giants.com/Big Blue Kickoff Live. And you can go straight to the page where we have all the archives of our morning program. So if you miss a program, within hours, we get it up on our site. So I advise you to continue to check out the site. And we have a running log of tweets using hashtag Giants Chat. So it's a great way to interact with the fellow fans. It's a great way to also interact with the host here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. But getting back to Mike Farmer's tweet and his question, is the outlook overall going to change? Listen, every coach has his fair share of feelings. And just because John Mara says something or a conversation is brought up during the offseason doesn't mean that Tom Coughlin is always going to say, hey, I've got to make sure I put rookies out there day one. Because at the end of the day, the rookie needs to be ready. Now, could Jernigan have had some additional opportunities a little bit earlier than the last three games of the season last year? Absolutely. But in all fairness, you have to stay healthy. I mean, we could have this debate with Adrian Robinson. Adrian Robinson now is entering year three. Why didn't we see anything out of Adrian Robinson in year one and two? Now, the skeptics will say, oh, well, the Giants just don't want to give opportunities to young guys. And I would say, no, that's not true, because Adrian Robinson failed to stay healthy. Adrian Robinson, when he got on the field for the Lions game last year, he doesn't even last the opening kickoff. Adrian Robinson came to the Giants late during his rookie campaign because Cincinnati graduated later, and then he was first getting the playbook a few weeks after some of the other young core was brought into the mix. So you take all of those things into consideration. It has nothing to do with the outlook of the coaching staff. It had more to do with the individual player. I think you need to find the balance between both to answer Mike's question. And it's a fair question, don't get me wrong. But to say Odell Beckham Jr. is our 12th overall pick, to use him as an example, and we need to do everything we can to get him out on the field. Absolutely, you want to see what he has to get. But if Odell Beckham Jr. suffered an injury, hypothetically, during the course of training camp and was not able to get the majority of reps, but Jernigan is out there, Manningham is out there, and they're showing some fluidity with the Ben McAdoo offense, and there's consistency in the preseason games, if I'm the coaching staff, I'm going to throw out those guys that have had the reps before I'm just going to throw out a guy that has a tremendous amount of upside, because I do want to see some practices. I do want to see at least some game action. And I think any coach would say that across the NFL landscape. That's not something that's unique to the Giants. There are a number of young guys on this roster that have an opportunity to make an impact. If they stay healthy and they get out there during training camp, the coaching staff is going to be forced to use them. It's not going to come back to a conversation behind closed doors where you're like, should we throw this guy out because he was a high draft pick and look at what Jernigan did last season. They're not going to have to sit and debate that. It's going to be simple. The guy has the resume. When he's been out there, he's shown consistency. Boom, we play him, period. Some of these other players that we've been debating about over the last few seasons, they have put the coaching staff in that position where it's, do we put him out there? He hasn't showed a great deal of consistency. If these young players go out there and make the coaching staff's job easy, it's not even going to be a question. And I also think with a lot of new coaches, a lot of new philosophies surrounding Tom Coughlin, new voices, I think that Coughlin is going to see things from a different perspective. So that should also help the case of a lot of young players. Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. And we go to our good buddy who really made things animated yesterday, Larry in Florida. Larry, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, Larry. Nice to see that you're just as amped up as you were yesterday. How's everything?
Oh, all the time. Even when you want to talk Giants football, I'm always amped up. First and foremost, before I get started, a big 40th happy birthday to Captain America, Derek Jeter. Hey, been a big fan his whole career. Hey, hate to lose him, but, you know, I guess with age and professional sports, you can't stick around forever.
But he is the true sign of durability, and you'd like to see that bringing it back to the Giants. If a lot of these players on this roster could show durability, that would be a big step in the right direction.
Absolutely. You answered a majority of my question earlier when you went through the offensive line. And, you know, everything rests on Snead and Deal and Beatty being healthy, and I love the addition of Schwartz. You know, that's a big, big concern for us. I'm hoping to see a lot of unity and the guys really healthy. We get into week two and three, and, you know, they're playing real good. You know, you talked earlier about somebody stepping up, a young guy making a difference. You know, I don't know how much he's going to play, but I'm really anxious to watch Andre Williams, the guy we drafted from Boston College, the running back. He was just a bruiser in college. Big, big bruiser guy, runs over people. I think that helps out. I think it helps the Wilson and the Jennings and everybody. You know, they're not in there getting banged up so much. As far as depth at receiver, I mean, this sounds great the last 2 days, don't it? We talked about running backs, tight ends, receivers. I know you got us third on the chart. You know, that's okay. I'll wait till week five or six, and we'll break down who's got the best receiving crew by then. I like you said, Washington did a good thing. They added in what's-his-face from Philadelphia.
DeSean Jackson.
They got position, but we'll see how good it is. You know what I mean? I'm looking forward to what we're going to do with all these additions we've put on in free agency. But it's all going to come down to, at the end of the day, how healthy is that offensive line when they step on that field? You know, I mean, you talked about Eli and the receivers kind of getting, still learning the system, getting going. Well, you know what? If they got a little more time and a little more protection, or these running backs, this really good running back crew, I'm saying really good because I like them, can open up a lot of that passing game for us. You know, it seemed like last year all we did was throw, and everybody knew it was coming. Running backs were hurt all the time. You know what I mean? We had no dependability in the backfield. So if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm just going to sit on you. Go ahead, Eli, try it. And you know, all he did was get picked off left and right. Well, I think we're going to see something a little bit different this year. And, you know, we got a couple young guys. You talked about a dual threat. Find a dual threat. I like the addition of Quentin Dance. Look at Dance. He's probably going to be, what, our third safety probably?
Absolutely.
But he still plays special teams real well. You know what I mean? These are good, good additions to the Giants roster. We got some young guys you're going to see a lot from. You talked about the receiving crew earlier. Hey, I can't wait to talk to you after week five or six to see where we rank in the East now. I'm really excited about them. Our defense is going to be stout. Everything's good there. I think JPP is going to anchor that defense and get them boys where they need to be. We got a lot to look forward to this year. I wouldn't go as far as 15 wins. I don't even care about that. You know, I used to a few years back. It was all about winning. But when the first Super Bowl of the last two, I'm trying to think of the year. But anyways, we were 8-8. We lost in New England by 3 points in week 16. Got into the playoffs. I mean, like you said earlier, who cares? Just get there. Just get there. I mean, we had to run through what? Tampa, Dallas, Green Bay, and then play at New England again. I just get there. Be healthy, if nothing else. Be healthy. And
be consistent. And be in games. Be competitive. That's the goal this season. That's what you want to do during the course of the regular season, Larry. It has nothing to do with whether or not you have a great resume and a great record, because once you get in,
right. You
delete the records. The records are meaningless. The team that's number one versus the team that's number six. I mean, yes, there may be some differences in personnel, but the records, you can throw them out the window at that point.
Absolutely. So, you know, I left yesterday with saying 10, possibly 11. I'm holding tight to 10. And, you know, we jump out there. We got Detroit in Detroit, I believe.
Correct.
One.
Yeah.
Big game. We should win that. I mean, Detroit ain't filled full of a bunch of superstars other than Matthew and Chad Johnson, who I really like.
Calvin Johnson, yeah. They do have a dynamic offense. Their defense has a handful of holes, but if they're healthy, they've got Reggie Bush, they've got a number of different tight ends. Let's put it this way. It's going to be a great test for the defense in week one, because the Lions are the type of team that they'll throw a lot of wide receivers out wide. They use their running backs in the receiving game. You now have Jim Caldwell, the head coach, who's an offensive-minded guy who was with the Colts when Peyton Manning was there. So it's a great test for the defense to get its feet wet and match up with a lot of good receivers. There's nothing wrong with that early in the year.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, I think a big step up this year on special teams is going to be huge for us. You know, get our defense, you know, where they're backing against the wall all the time. Get our offense in position to, you know, they don't have to make big plays right away. They can just work down the field. There's a lot of things to look forward to, but I tell you, I was told you earlier, you answered my question about the line when you went through it earlier. But you listened to the show the last 2 days. We're talking about the offense, and there's a lot of big names in there, a lot of good names, a lot of young names I'm excited to see. So I'll tell you right now, we're what, June 26th? I'm going to stand true on 10-6. I really am. 10-6 comes through, and God forbid we pull off a sweep of one of the three in the division, which, like we talked about yesterday, you have to. We pull off a sweep and beat one big team, a San Fran, a Seattle, an Atlanta. Indy is a big one, you know, and I'm not saying Detroit's not big, but I just didn't throw them in that mix yet. You pull out a sweep and a win, I might think you might be looking at a 12-win season. You know, look at, what's his name, from the Dallas Morning Star yesterday or the day before, that went ahead and said the Giants are going to win the East this
year.
Correct.
A lot of the Dallas writers are picking the Giants. You're right. And a lot of people across the league.
Down there.
Correct. They're behind them. And listen, Larry, I want to get to some other phone calls. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. You could also interact with me on Twitter at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, MEDOW. They started off 0-6 last season. Giants went 2-4, 3-3 over those first six games. Certainly could have been in the mix for the postseason. So, you know, we could sit here and talk about 10 versus 11 wins. They're going to be in position to win 10 or 11 games as long as they get off to a strong start, because it's the games early that are going to come back to haunt you. And there were a lot of games that could have easily went their way early in the season. And sometimes you need the ball to bounce your way, but you can't afford to dig yourself in a deep hole. If the Giants set the tone early and you've got the Lions on the road, as Larry just threw out, on Monday Night Football to open up the season, then you come back to host the Cardinals, and you host the Texans, and then you visit the Redskins. Those are the first four games, the first quarter of the season. You're going to get one division rival. You're going to get the Lions, who have a new head coach, but pretty much the personnel is what it was last season. The Texans, they're trying to revamp things with Bill O'Brien, and the Cardinals coming off a 10-win season, and they didn't even make the playoffs. So there's some tough competition in that first four grouping of games, but they got to win. You win, you get off to a good start, then all of a sudden there's not pressure on you in the last seven games of the season to be perfect, because there was an immense amount of pressure on the Giants late last season where they could not have any blemishes on the resume. One step backwards, that's it. Season is over. And that's what happened. You go 4-2 in the first six games, or even 3-3, you're giving yourself a shot. And that's all they want. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, man? Oh, man, that guy, amp level be at an all-time high.
He's your medicine every morning. If you're not awake, okay, you listen to this program and Larry gets you dancing.
Yeah, him. Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
Woo. Okay, man. Now, look, man, I've been itching to get in on this conversation now. There's a few things.
Well, better that you're itching than poo-pooing, I'll tell you that.
Oh, look, man, I'm itching to get at this real quick. Okay, first of all, I'm going to get on this 12-4, 15-1, whatever he said. My thing about that is, I understand what y'all saying. You know, you want to just get in because we prove it. You know, once you get in, it's all game. You know, you can get to the Super Bowl. A team, I said this on my show, a team like Cleveland, if they can get in the playoffs and they get high at the right moment, they could go to the Super Bowl and win. You know, so all you gotta get into the playoffs. It's hard to get in the playoffs, but once you get in, it's all game. But my thing about that is, I don't want to be complacent with these 8-8 records or 9-7. Or, you know, I want to be an 11-win team. I want to be a 12-win team, a dominant team that teams are afraid to play us. That's what I want.
And I agree. I think that's a fair statement, Shakes. And you would like to have that season like 2008, which unfortunately they weren't able to take advantage of, where you're setting the tempo, not just in the division, but in the NFC. You secure home field advantage, and you're sitting in a very comfortable position. But the Giants just seem to be the type of team where a bye could actually hurt them. They seem to be the team that just needs to play each and every week, needs to have things with their backs against the wall. It just seems as if this is the type of team that flourishes, Shakes. And I'm only going by the resume, where it serves them well. Now, that doesn't mean that they should be 8-8 every year or be around 9-7. But if you have 10 wins, and 10-6 to me is a solid season. That's not running away with things, but that's just at least remaining competitive and at least solidifying a postseason spot. So you get 10 wins, you're doing fine. You don't necessarily need 13 to feel good about yourselves.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. But, again, I want to be a team to impose our will on teams. I want to dominate, you know. That's my whole thing about it. I'm tired of the mediocrity play. I want to be a dominant team. And as far as, you know, going to the playoffs and, you know, being a team that likes to bash against the walls and going against on road and Tampa Bay and Green Bay and all that type of stuff, San Francisco, I don't want to do that, though. You know, I don't want to harp on that. I'd rather them come to New Jersey. I'd rather them come to our home, you know. So let's get that by. I just feel that way. Okay, and also I wanted to speak on something else that you spoke on with the wide receiver corps. I agree with you that Washington, they are very deep with the corps, so I may give you that they won, but we're number two. We're number two. You cannot say that Philly got a better corps than us. Just looking at it, even if you throw Randall and you don't know what's going on with Beckham, just the fact that we got Cruz is a dominant wide receiver. They don't have a dominant wide receiver. Not one. Okay?
Well,
they
Macklin
is
healthy.
Average.
Macklin can be a guy that can get you 7 to 8 catches a game and 100 yards. He can. Before he got hurt, he was that type of receiver. So, you know, he could get back to
full form. He's not no Cruz, though.
No, he's not Victor Cruz in terms of the speed and how he stretches the field. That I absolutely agree with you.
That's what I'm saying. So I mean, it's a good debate, you know, between the Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver core and the Giants wide receiver core, but I give the core to the Giants on that one. So I got us the second best core right now. And we could end up being the first if they all step up and dominate like I expect them to, because I love speed and this team has it.
Well, and then if also, you add the running backs in the mix too, you know, you even add more speed with that. So you're right. I mean, remember, keep in mind, Shakes, the heart of this conversation, and I thought you brought up good points, I'm coming from on paper and the resumes from last season. When I look at the Giants receiving core compared to the other receiving cores, you know, there's a number of resumes that have yet to be written. For example, Odell Beckham Jr., we could sit down and look at his LSU stats all you want, but he's got no NFL resume. Mario Manningham does not have much of a resume over the last few seasons because he's been hurt. Reuben Randall has a little resume, but he doesn't have a huge resume like some of the Redskins receivers. So that's what I'm going by, and that's why I'm giving you the rankings based on that. Because even if I look at Philadelphia, with what I've seen out of Riley Cooper and Jeremy Maclin, I at least have a little bit more to go on than what the Giants depth chart has to offer.
But they question marks, though.
They
Maclin
are.
Maclin with the injury.
Correct.
Exactly. You can say the same thing that you're saying about the Giants receivers. You can say them about Philly. So for you to give them the edge, I'm not with that.
Well, it's close.
That's your
it's
opinion.
Close, though. You can't say
yes,
that.
It
it's miles and miles apart, though.
No, it's not miles apart. That's why I say it's a good debate. But I give the edge to the Giants. I also wanted to speak on this kiss of death that y'all putting on me.
Okay? Kiss of death? Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, this whole Aaron Curry thing, okay? Y'all are putting this curse on me that once I start liking these players, they're gone. Now, listen, that Aaron Curry thing was hope-based, okay? My thing about Holiday is performance-based. I'm liking what I see on the field from Holiday. With Curry, I was hoping that I would like what I see on the field from him because we needed a linebacker. But we don't need a wide receiver to come out of the woodworks and do anything. We got Cruz, and I think Randall's going to come out, and I believe in Beckham. But if this guy, Holiday, you can't account for speed. That's something that you cannot defend. Not by yourself. You got to scheme, and you got to have 2-3 people, you know, spying and you know, watching him. Man, I'm telling you, he's going to be a dangerous target for us. And I agree with you, Lance. I've been saying it on my show. It's going to be a Christmas every time he touched the ball. Holiday, man.
Well, Shakes, here's the positive. You're talking about the curse. The good news is I'm bailing you out because I'm behind Trindon Holiday, and he's my one guy to watch. I don't have the track record that you have with respect to Aaron Curry. So if anything, the fact that I'm also behind Trindon Holiday, perhaps we're going to end the curse this season, and then you won't make me look bad as well. So I'm pulling for Trindon Holiday for the sake of my reputation, and I will be more than happy to bring you along for the ride.
I appreciate that, Lance. And oh yeah, I know you peeked out the tweets. They said Aaron from DC had called a shakedown.
I did see that. There's a lot of speculation throughout social media. Yes, I heard that Ann has now given up Big Blue Kickoff Live, so now she can bother you on the shakedown. Have you survived?
Yeah.
Are you in good shape? Did you have to go to the doctor to get a checkup? Are you okay? I just want to make sure.
It was interesting. I just let her go that first time. I just let her go because it was so shocking that she called. Then I was like, whoa, is the FDC? Really? Calling the shakedown. Oh, this is interesting. This is classic right here. And I just let her go, and she went off, man. Oh, she went off.
When does she not go off? Tell me something
I
don't know.
She did not seem to disappoint, man. It was crazy. So it was interesting. She said she would be calling in more. So that's some good news for the shakedown crew. You ain't catch the show, did you, yet?
I did not have an opportunity. Unfortunately, I've been tied up. But I certainly will take a listen. I promise you that, especially as this period slows down and I have a few minutes. I definitely do want to take a listen to the shakedown eventually. And we continue to promote it on this program. We want you to continue to build the following. We don't necessarily want you to continue to build the following with Ann and DC. But you know what? Hey, you'll take what you can get at this point.
No doubt, man. Thanks for the love, man.
You got it, Shakes. All right, good talking with you. Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland, now having to deal with Ann in D.C., and selfishly, I will say, that's fine. She doesn't want to call this program. I am not going to lose any sleep over that. I have had my fair share of back and forths, as well as John Schmelk. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. I want to give people their due on Twitter, so let me go back to Twitter a little bit before we head back to the phone lines. A number of you weighing in on the multitude of topics that we are throwing out here. Let's take a look. Anthony in Phoenix writes, a 12th pick referring to Odell Beckham Jr. needs to start, and I'm real happy we did not get Eric Ebron. He is trouble. Ebron wound up going to the Detroit Lions. Well, Odell Beckham at the 12th overall pick, and this gets back to the whole thing about if a guy is drafted at this spot, he should definitely be thrown into the mix. David Wilson had opportunities as a young guy. But David Wilson also, remember, fumbled the football, and that didn't necessarily help his cause. So, you know, when we say that no rookie has ever gotten a shot on the Giants, that to me is too much of a generalization. They've gotten an opportunity, but I guarantee you if we looked at the trend, either injury or some mishap on the field has cost them playing time as a result. Now, you can make the debate, and I remember having this conversation with a lot of you when David Wilson fumbled in his first ever game against the Cowboys. You can't bench him, you have to continue to let him play out his issues and so forth. And then there were a number of you on the other side of the argument where, hey, Coughlin's got to send him a message, and that's why they took him to the side. Keep in mind, David Wilson fumbled in his NFL debut against the Cowboys, and then what did he do in the opener against the Cowboys in 2013? He fumbled again. Sometimes you need to be hard on these guys, and you need to give them tough love. And that's the Tom Coughlin style of coaching. It's worked pretty well because it has won two Super Bowls. Does it wear down on players at times? Yes, absolutely. That's why you need to have a good read on your players. Some you have to give the tough love. Some you have to be a little bit more careful and cautious in how you go about your business. But I don't think just because a guy is drafted at a spot automatically means he should get a starting gig. You have to earn your job here. And you have to prove consistency. And you have to stay healthy. Most important. You don't stay healthy, no point to throwing out and taking a chance with a guy. Jay Smith at JUBLU1. If Tom Coughlin, Jerry Reese were confident in Jarrell Jernigan, probably wouldn't have drafted Odell Beckham Jr. Jarrell Jernigan will have to work hard to make the team eye on Holiday. Well, a number of you are jumping on the Trindon Holiday bandwagon, which is nice. Now, I don't want to put his expectations through the roof. I'm only going by what I've seen in minicamp, what I've seen in OTAs, and how I think he'll fit into a Ben McAdoo offense. I think there's potential. I think there's upside. And I think what Jay alluded to is something that I brought up earlier in the show. Jarrell Jernigan's got competition. And just because he shined for three games doesn't mean, like the debate with respect to early draft picks, should not be handed a job just because he did well over three games. He's got to beat out the competition. So I think Jay brings up a good point. Josh Dunn at Dunny Villain. Larry in Florida called in earlier, piggybacking off of a point that he made, saying Larry's absolutely right. We were forced to throw last year because we had a shocking running game. Much better this year. Not exactly sure about the point there, but I guess what Larry had mentioned is the fact that the Giants threw more because they had no running game, and it did not then catch defenses off guard. And I agree with Josh. I agree with Larry. The offense at times was one-dimensional, and part of that was because the offensive line wasn't protecting Eli Manning, and the offensive line wasn't opening things up for the running backs. And that's what happens. You're going to struggle. But when the offensive line improved the way it did over the course of the offseason, you assume that you're going to have a better running game, and that will then do wonders for your passing game. It goes hand-in-hand, just like the secondary is going to help out your defensive line, and the defensive line is going to help out the secondary. Let's continue to take a look at a few more tweets here before we get back to the lines. Need a pinky ring at Big Blue Got Rings. Piggybacking off of Shake's point, Giants just need to get in regardless of record. Last time the Giants had a dominant record, they got ejected earlier, and that was that 2008 campaign. And a number of you are echoing the sentiments of Shake's, of need a pinky ring, and so forth. However, Mike Farmer brings up, and Shake's did bring this up, I think Shake's point is that 10 wins is a good goal, but there's nothing wrong with aiming higher. Couldn't hurt. Can't argue with that. Hey, if you could get a 14-win season every year, you're going to tell me you wouldn't take it as a team? Absolutely. But I guess where I'm coming from is not to get caught up in 13 and 14 wins. It's nice. It's great. Hey, it's great to show dominance. Perfect. But if you win 10 games and you get in, nothing wrong with that. If you win 9 games and that gets you in, nothing wrong with that. I think any goal for a team, specifically the Giants, if you look at what happened last year, you want to be competitive. You want to be competitive every game. And last year, the Giants were competitive in some games and lopsided in the others. That is not the sign of a consistent team. And a lot of the inconsistencies came in those first 6 games. So if you're competitive in those first 6 games, you're in it against Carolina, for example. Remember that game very early in the season. A game here, a game there could be the difference between making and missing the playoffs. Let's head back to the lines. 201-939-4513. Our good buddy Drew is in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, what's going on, man?
Doing well, Drew. How about yourself? What you got?
Good, good. Hey, first off, man, with regards to Shake, I don't think any team is trying to settle for a 9-7 record or anything. So, you know, teams want as good a record as they can get. I don't think the years the Giants won that Super Bowl, they was planning on a 9-7 record.
Absolutely not. And I don't know if necessarily right. That was Shake's point, Drew. I understand where you're coming from. I guess Shake's point was he wants to see a team that sets the tone from week 1 through week 16 and punches all of its opponents in the face and does it in a dominant fashion where there's no question marks, there's no inconsistencies. However, it's difficult to do that because every team has to deal with injuries. Every team is thrown curveballs, so there's going to be a low period where, hey, you may lose a game or two. That's natural for any of the powerhouses in the NFL.
Right, right. And I agree with that, and I understand, and I agree with that last sentiment, which is you want to set the tone early. I agree with that, which is why I'm saying what I said, which is I don't think any team is trying to settle for a 9-7 record. So I do agree with that. And you know, the other thing is the other question is you know, because you guys had me laughing. Wasn't Ann? I thought Ann was banned, which is why she's not calling in. I'm not missing her. I was just curious. I thought she was.
Well,
banned.
I believe John officially banned her from the show. I was not here on that program, but if what you were saying and what a number of other callers and listeners are saying, I believe she was banned. And I remember the last time I took a call from her, you know, she got a bit racist, which was not ideal. And that's really the main reason. See, you know, at the end of the day, she's entitled to her opinions about the Giants, as each and every one of you are. And, you know, we do the best we can to give you an opportunity to voice your opinions because it provides for a healthy debate. But when you start crossing the line and you insult other listeners and callers in the fan base, you know, we have to at least cut people off. So I think that's where she crossed the line, essentially, and that's essentially why somebody had to step in and ban her.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I was just saying, because, you know, you was like, well, you know, if Ann wants to call over there and don't want to call us, and I'm like, well, the reason she ain't calling us is because she's banned.
And I'm not complaining about that, Drew, I'll tell you that.
You know, that was my point, man. And, you know, the other thing, man, is actually, man, Mike Farmer took my question. But I'm going to rephrase it anyway. I'm going to ask it anyway, but I'm going to go a different way. You think ownership, this is with regards to Coughlin and his, a lot of our complaints that he doesn't like to play rookies. With that, you think maybe ownership might have put a little bit pressure on him to say, look, man, we're drafting these guys and you're not playing them. You need to give them a chance. Because, again, I go back to the remarks that, you know, why does it take so long for us to discover a person like Jernigan? Now, trust me, I understand that these guys are rookies and they make mistakes and they might not have everything down. I get it. Let's put that aside. It's a big part, but I guess the point of it is, if you know, like Jerry Reese is going out here drafting all of these guys and they don't get to see the field. And, you know, I'm just wondering if there's a bit of frustration there.
Well, I'm sure that ownership has passed that along, and there's very open dialogue between the coaching staff and ownership. As you could tell from listening to John Mara, he's extremely passionate about this football team, and every offseason when he says the team's going to be aggressive or it's going to do this, they wind up coming through with that. And the other thing is, he's not the type of guy that's going to BS to the media. And we saw that with respect to Jarrell Jernigan. I mean, he didn't have to make that statement, Drew, at the end of the day. He didn't have to pinpoint Jarrell Jernigan and use him as an example, but he basically saw what the fan base said and what the fan base saw. And you see what Jarrell Jernigan did over the last three games, and everybody who follows football, not just the New York Giants, is saying, where was this? I mean, how did this come out of the blue? So it's fair to question that. To answer your question, I don't know if John Mara is putting more pressure on Tom Coughlin and saying, listen, Tom, you've got to play Odell Beckham Jr. week one, and you got to continue to play him all throughout the season, regardless of the work ethic he shows, because I don't want to then have to wait for year three to see his true potential. But I think that there's now going to be an effort to say, hey, what can we do to get these guys on a faster track in terms of their development? I think that is at least something that is being discussed so that you don't have to sit back and say, okay, we're going to draft a guy in 2011, and then we're not going to reap the rewards till 2015. And you can't afford to do that, Drew, because with rookie contracts at 4 years, by the time they show their true potential, they're going to hit free agency, and you're not going to be able to re-sign them. So there's definitely an urgency to get the most out of them early.
Right, and I think that's the point. I think that's what I'm saying. I kind of thought I heard a little bit of that frustration and ownership. Like, man, look, we're drafting these guys and you're not playing them. So, yeah, you know, you kind of answered my question. Then lastly, man, I just want to jump in on this bandwagon. Everybody's making their picks. I'm going to say 9-7 for the Giants. You know, I think I still have questions about the defense, really. And, you know, I think there may be some learning curves here or there with the offense. But you could put me down for 9-7.
9-7. Real quickly, before I let you go, just out of curiosity, what's the questions about the defense? I'm just curious where you're coming from.
I guess I didn't talk to you yesterday. I must have talked to John the other day. My question is the pass rush. I'm sorry.
Okay.
The pass rush. You know, I think that on paper, you know, and everybody's going on paper. You know, it's on paper until we actually play the game. So, but on paper, I agree that we have a very good secondary and everything on paper. But, you know, I've always said, and I will continue to say, your secondary is only as good as your pass rush, as your front, okay? And I just think there are too many questions there. You know, we don't know how, you know, Beeson's hurt, okay? You don't know, you're hoping, and everybody's optimistic that JPP will come around. You know, you don't really know what Kiwi's going to do. So there's questions there. And, you know, how's this pass rush going? Because you could have the greatest secondary in the world. But, you know, they can only hold up for so long, especially with these receivers. And, you know, we talk about the receivers in the East. So, yeah, I'm kind of a little worried about the pass rush. Not the secondary, but the pass rush. Yeah, the secondary is great, but they can only hold up for so long.
And that's a fair point, Drew. No, I think you're spot on. The pass rush, a lot of question marks from last season, and they even lost some guys, including Justin Tuck, so they need to go out there and prove that. And I think that they have better cover guys, but you're right. You still can only hang tight with your wide receiver for X amount of seconds, so it's still going to be imperative for them to put pressure on the quarterback. But at least when you look at the depth of the secondary, that should bode well for the defensive line to perhaps even have an extra second or two to get to the quarterback. So while I agree the secondary is only as good as the defensive line, I think, though, the secondary can help the defensive line improve.
Well, we certainly hope so because, again, there's no doubt that the secondary, you know, on paper is better than what we had last year, even with us losing Will Hill. But, again, we've seen it time and time again. If a quarterback is hot and he's getting the ball out, I mean, you know, let's not forget these receivers get paid to play too.
Absolutely. Drew, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thank you, sir.
You got it. Drew in Virginia weighing in. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Continue to send in your tweets. I'll get to more of them as the show progresses. At Lance Meadow, one word, last name, Medow. Taj is in Virginia. Taj, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, good morning. How you doing, man?
Good morning to you, Taj. What's happening with you? What you got?
Well, I was thinking about the season. And I think for us as Giants fans and probably ownership and everyone, I think this is probably, if I can be bold enough to say, one of the most anticipated seasons that I can remember or think of in a long, long, long time. because of all the changes that have been made. But my thing is that I'm going back. I'm thinking about it. I said 2007, we won the Super Bowl. 2008, we followed it up. I think we went 12-0. We were going 12-0 or something like that. And then we had the issue with Plaxico.
Well, they weren't 12-0. They had lost to Cleveland a little bit earlier in the season. I believe they were about 11-1 at one point. But your point is well taken. They were off to an incredible start.
Okay, and then the season kind of went downhill. We got crushed by Philly, right? Was that in the playoffs?
In the playoffs, correct.
Okay, then the next year, in the offseason, I think the biggest thing was the jury was out. The questions was about the wide receiver corps in 2009, if I'm not mistaken.
It was. It was a big question mark about who would replace Plaxico Burress. And actually, that turned out to be one of the pleasant surprises.
Yep. So we had Steve Smith. We had Amani. I think Amani was still balling, right?
Yeah.
And then we had Dominique Hickson stepped up big time that year before he hurt his knee. But when I think about that year and I think about this year, my question mark really is with the wide receivers. I feel like the jury right now is still really out. It reminds me a lot of the 09 season where there was a lot of question marks about the wide receivers. Cruz is going ball. We already know that. Cruz is going ball. But after that, you know, there's a lot of question marks after Cruz. You know, there really is. And you know, it brings me back to the 09 season. As far as Reuben Randle, you know, I think Reuben Randle has all the talent in the world. He has a lot of potential to be a big-time receiver, to be a very solid number two. But I also think about how Reuben Randle handled adversity last year. When things weren't going well, he kind of had a tantrum, and he pouted a little bit. You know, he took some shots at Eli and you know the offensive coaching staff a little bit, and I think that Reuben he has to grow up and he has to be more of a mature football player if the wide receivers in the offense is going to take that step forward. You know, so what do you think about that so far, Lance?
Well, I like your comparison to the 2009 season. And with respect to Reuben Randle, he had a very good training camp last year, and it didn't necessarily translate over to the regular season. There were some games where he was good, and then there were some games where he had some mental lapses. If you recall the Broncos game where he fumbled the ball right near the goal line. So you had your fair share of ups and downs, and he's having a very productive offseason again. But it's all about, as you mentioned, Taj, he's got to be consistent. He's got to put everything together. I think he's shown that during the course of the offseason. If he could do that, he can become a reliable weapon. I want to get back to your comparison to the 2009 season, because I brought up the statistics. Amani Toomer actually was not on the team then. This is what the receiving core looked like. You brought up Steve Smith, and you were right. He really exceeded all expectations. He led the team with 107 receptions for over 1,200 receiving yards. So he was the number one guy that became a very consistent playmaker. In addition to him, you had Akeem Nicks come through with 790 receiving yards. He had 47 receptions. He was third on the team. Manningham was actually second. Manningham had 57 for 822. So some of the young guys stepped up, filled the void around Steve Smith. And then in addition to that, you did have Dominique Hickson, who didn't necessarily wow with the numbers, but made a handful of big plays during the course of the year. And then they also had some production out of Kevin Boss in the tight end spot, because Kevin Boss was actually the fourth leading receiver. He had 42 receptions. So it's not a stretch. And I really like the point you brought up, Taj. If you look at 2008, being aggressive in the offseason, having some holes to fill, relying on youth, a lot of people were skeptical about the receiving corps. Similar now, you lose Akeem Nicks, then you lost Plaxico Burress, who's going to fill the void. We could have a similar storyline where a lot of guys that were not anticipating stepping up can wind up really bringing something consistent to the table, and then it doesn't become an issue. I could definitely see it playing out that way. That's a fair comparison.
Yep. And the player that, you know, I think we've talked about a lot of the players that, you know, are kind of like on a hot seat. You know, they got to do something. And the player that really hasn't been brought up that I want to bring up, and I heard a lot of praise about him. I know he's went through a lot of adversity, you know, with his illness and stuff like that. But, you know, I think that the Giants staff was expecting more out of Mark Herzlick. Honestly, you know, I think he's been fair, but I don't think he's really came through and really has, you know, kind of progressed the way that maybe the Giants thought he did. I thought, my opinion, I thought this dude could have been potentially, you know, coming out of the draft to start in, you know, a starting linebacker, you know, in the rotation, you know, and, you know, I see, you know, Spencer, and I see, you know, my Jaquan Williams, you know, I see them, and I feel like they're in front of Mark. I know he's helped out a lot on special teams, but I think that he's one of those guys that, you know, I don't know, you know, is he somebody that could be easily replaced? You know, do you think he's on a hot seat?
I think Mark Herzlick is definitely on the hot seat, and you brought up a number of good points, Taj. The writing's been on the wall. They have not had a real proven middle linebacker for the last few seasons. Herzlick has always been in the mix. Last year, they had six linebackers competing for three starting jobs and three backup roles. It was wide open, and Herzlick was in the mix and didn't win that job. And every season, we hear his name being brought to the forefront, and every season, he winds up returning to that backup linebacker, complimentary special teamer. And you were talking about coming out of college, and he was an undrafted guy that was brought into the mix with the Giants. Unfortunately, had to deal with cancer while he was in college.
Right.
Mark Herzlick was one of the best linebackers.
He was a beast.
In college football. You're right. I mean, he was at the top of his game at Boston College. Unfortunately, he had some health issues, and that hurt his draft status. And I was like you. The Giants, to bring somebody like that in undrafted, I mean, that's an absolute steal. You've got nothing to lose. Hey, you bring him into the mix, maybe you could really get somebody who can blossom and help anchor that linebacker core. Unfortunately, it has not panned out that way. But as they've brought in more and more linebackers, the competition has increased. And you're right. Just like I've thrown out the Jayron Hosleys, the Jarrell Jernigans of the world, the Adrian Robinsons, you know, it's there. The opportunity is there for Herzlick. Will he take advantage of it? You got Jameel McClain now in the mix. You didn't have to deal with Jameel McClain last season. So, you know, it's not as if the Giants are sitting back and waiting for Herzlick. All they're doing is they're exploring their options. But it's fair to throw in Herzlick's name in that mix of guys where you're waiting, and you're wondering, is this going to be the season?
Yep. And then the last thing is that, you know, I know that there's been a lot of talk about how many wins, you know, 10, 11, 12, 15, you know, 9. Honestly, right now, I don't know what the Giants is going to do. I don't know how many they're going to win. I, in my gut feeling, I believe that it's going to be a good year. That's what I believe. But the way I want the Giants to approach it, and I want them to look at it, is like, man, we haven't proven nothing. We got dog last year. We was embarrassed, and we were at the pun of a lot of jokes on SportsCenter and NFL.com. New York Post, and all these other stuff. So I just want the Giants to come in with a mindset of let's take it one game at a time, and I want everybody to have that dog in them. You know what I'm saying? Now, if we lose some games, but we're competitive, like you said, and we're playing team football, we're sticking together, and we're doing what we have to do, I'm perfectly fine with that. But as far as how many wins the Giants are going to have this year, nobody knows. We don't know injuries. We don't know who's going to show up. We don't know, you know, we don't know anything. You know, all we know is that what the schedule is, you know, and I think right now is that because we don't know, the Giants have to take that approach, and they got to take it that one game at a time. You know, I'm kind of like Drew. You know, I feel like it's going to be, you know, potentially a 9-7 season. You know, but I think that would be a great improvement from last year. But, I mean, ultimately, we don't know. But, you know, I believe in my gut that it's going to be a good season for the Giants. I think we're going to find out a lot, you know, about Ben McAdoo and him play calling for the first time. I think we're going to find out a lot about him. You know, I like the moves that the Giants made in the offseason. And I got the utmost respect for Tom Coughlin, man. I salute the dude. You know, he's going down as one of the, you know, the greatest coaches, you know, in football, you know, of all time, you know, and just to be able to win in New York. And I got to salute Jerry Reese, too. I don't always agree with everything Jerry Reese does, but I understand that everything he does is to better the team. So that's all I have for today. I appreciate you taking my call, Lance, and, you know, you and John do a great job as always, man.
Well, appreciate that, Taj. Thanks so much for chiming in, and a number of good points that Taj brought up. And it's always interesting to compare one season to another, and I love the comparison between that 2009 receiving core and this receiving core. Similar questions, similar storyline, similar plot. So that was an interesting storyline. And if anybody wants to weigh in on future shows or on Twitter or give us a ring at 201-939-4513, I'd be curious to see whether or not anybody else can see those comparisons between this offseason versus the 2009, at least with respect to the receiving core. But his last point that Taj mentioned, time will tell. And it's nice to see, it's nice to hear that there's a lot of excitement surrounding the Giants fan base based on some of the moves they made, that you feel good and you feel that they're going to have a bounce back season. But training camp is going to tell a lot. We're going to have a better idea of what these individual players can bring to the table. We can only see so much at OTAs and minicamp. All right, let's head back to the lines. Our good buddy Steve is in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, what's happening, Lance? Thanks for taking my call, buddy.
Not a problem, Steve.
I take it your pom-poms are still down from the fan call, the fan question from earlier on the website.
Oh, I see. Boy, you're really looking at the content on Giants.com.
Oh, man.
I can't get anything past you.
No, you can't, man. And I'm a little bit bored with the content. I think one of the things they had Cruz, you know, doing the soft and slow motion. Come on now. Do we really need to see that?
Well, you know, listen,
hey,
it's what every team is dealing with right now. The NFL as a whole, we've got to give you something over the next few weeks until the latter part of July comes around.
I
mean, come on, Steve.
Kicker talking about soccer and kicking and all this. I'm like, oh, man, is this all I get?
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. Steve, you bleed blue, no? Do you not bleed blue?
No doubt about it.
All right, so then, listen, if you bleed blue, you will watch, you will listen to just about anything. So,
hey, look,
you can't complain from that perspective.
I did watch, man. And I was like, man, he really doesn't saucer that well.
There you go. See, you're looking at it from a different angle. You never know what it opens up.
Exactly. I'm critiquing his saucer. Listen, I'm going to go ahead and give my man Drew props. I know he likes to give me a hard time as often as he possibly can because we usually don't agree with everything. But I am also in agreement that I think there was just a little bit of I wouldn't say resentment. Just a little bit of frustration with not getting our younger players on the field a little bit more. And I think there is some pressure there. And it should be. I know Tom Coughlin is an excellent coach. I'm very happy to have him. He will definitely be a Hall of Famer. But just because of his resume, I don't think we should say that there should never be any changes in his coaching. No, he needs to change that. Clearly, we should not be having players on our roster who don't get a proper opportunity. I'm one of those people who really felt like, you know, the younger the guys are, the more opportunity they should get, especially, you know, if they're a high draft pick, i.e., you know, David Wilson. So I'm not a fan of, one mistake and, you know, you're sitting down for the rest of the season. I'm just not a fan of that at all.
Here's a question, Steve, though, and you're bringing up a point that a lot of people are debating on Twitter, and it is a fair question with not just the Giants, any team, about how you go about looking at young players. Did Tom Coughlin benching David Wilson, do you think, though, it has helped him in his development or at least will help him over the course of his career?
Man, I don't think we'll ever know. I don't think we'll ever know. I kind of felt like it hurt us as a team. I felt like he was the best player to be in at the time and the reason why he was fighting. So, no, I don't think it helped us as a team. It might have helped him individually, but I'm all about the team. We should have left the guy in there and let him, you know, make his rookie mistakes and, you know, and grow from them and hopefully get better. So, no, I mean, you know.
Well, keep in mind, keep in mind, Steve, if he doesn't get hurt with that neck injury earlier last season, he's still going to be a big focal point to that running game last year because it wasn't as if they weren't giving him carries even after that fumbling game in the opener against the Cowboys. So, you know, right now, I guess when you look at David Wilson, he doesn't have a lot on the resume because he's been hurt too. it's not just about the mental mistakes. It's also about staying healthy. So that's why you say, oh, we would like to see more out of David Wilson, but he really hasn't had the opportunities because he hasn't been healthy. So I think if we can get him healthy, it's a different story in terms of how we would talk about him.
Well, let's hope that would have been the case. I mean, it's all hypothetical at this point, but the man did bench him prematurely, in my opinion. I don't want to be the dead horse, but I'm definitely one of those people that think we shouldn't worry about, first of all, teams of the past. It should always be the goal to go undefeated. I don't know why people are talking about having a bye week like it's a curse when most teams, you know, that's their goal is, obviously win the division and try to get a bye week. So just because we hadn't done well in the past off a bye week certainly doesn't mean that we won't benefit from it in the future. And really what bothers me so much is basically this is a whole new team. I don't really want to talk about things of the past because the only, thing that's really staying the same is Eli. But since we have a new offense, we don't really know how Eli's going to play in this offense. We don't know how Cruz is going to play in this offense. So I don't really like to, to form opinions about, things that happened in our past. This is a new day, guys. This is a new Giants team all the way around, pretty much. You know, considering our offense, anyhow, we have a lot of new players. I do think we're probably right now on paper the second best receiving core in the league. I don't really know why you're edging, giving Philly the edge over us, but I'm with Shakes. I think right now on paper I like us a little bit better than Philly. I wanted to have some questions. I didn't want to just come on with a bunch of opinions today, but one of the questions I have for you, Lance, is I've been reading a lot, and it seems like I don't know who's putting this out, Jerry Reese, or where this is coming from, but somebody strongly, and I emphasize strongly, believes that Adrian Robinson and Donnell are going to have breakout years. And I want to know how you feel about this. Where is this coming from? Because it's out there. It is way out there. And I'm excited about it. But I want to know, is this coming from the GM or is this coming from, the coaching staff? Or, every time I turn around, I'm hearing that, the expectations are not higher than the fans are as far as the tight ends are concerned.
Well, I think it's also coming from the media. I don't necessarily think it's just coming from the Giants organization that somebody within management is just throwing it out there so that it can circulate. But I think when you evaluate the circumstances, here's the way that I look at Adrian Robinson in particular, more so than Larry Dinell. Adrian Robinson in the rookie campaign in 2012, Martellus Bennett is here, and Martellus Bennett is here in front of him on the depth chart. So, he's coming in, he's a young guy, expectations are not high, and clearly the Giants knew what they were going to get pretty much out of Martellus Bennett, that he was signed to be the starter. Last year, then, the Giants, they go out, they grab Brandon Myers. So it's an opportunity for Adrian Robinson to continue to develop, but once again, he knows, okay, I'm pretty much going to be a backup. This season, who's in front of him, Steve? There's no one in front of Adrian Robinson. You could say that the Giants brought in some veterans like Daniel Fells and Kellen Davis, but I would not put them in the same class as Martellus Bennett, even Brandon Myers, because they don't have the same type of a resume in terms of what they did. So the reason why expectations are higher than previous seasons is Adrian Robinson has the ability to be the starting tight end for the New York Giants more so than any of his previous two seasons here. Number two, it's a brand new offense, which is going to utilize the tight end differently than how the old regime utilized. So that's why there's a bit more excitement. He has athleticism. He has physicality. I understand it's easy to say that about anybody, but I'm just talking about you look at him and you see something. So that's the third factor. And the fourth factor is the guy is animated, the guy's excited, and he's starting to see the writing on the wall. And sometimes you need to deal with adversity for a few years before you finally come to grips with the fact, hey, if I don't take the bull by the horn, if I don't do something, I'm not going to be on this 53-man roster. So putting all four of those factors together, Steve, and that's just what I'm coming from. That's why I think there's at least some type of excitement buildup around Adrian Robinson. I don't think it's coming from the organization. I don't think somebody has an agenda with respect to Adrian Robinson. I think these are just the facts that I just threw out there.
Well, yeah, I don't agree with that. I know I did read one article that was a quote from Jerry Reese, though, saying he expected big things from those guys. But, Lance, I also wanted to kind of put, not that my word is validation for anything, but I know Drew had brought up, when you asked him about what his concerns were, with the defense, and he quoted, you know, the pass rush. And I just ask everybody, that first of all, our pass rush can't get any worse than what it was last year. And here's why I think it's going to be better. Number one, I do think Ayers is going to be a lot more consistent than Justin Tuck was towards the end of the year. I expect Kiwi to step it up, so now that his pay has been cut, and he's going to be looking to be playing after this year, and it probably won't be for the Giants, thank goodness. And that, while we're talking about him, I do think Boston College players get a lot more leeway than everybody else, but I'm going to get away from that, and I'm just going to say this is why I think the pass rush would be better. Do you agree with this or not? First of all, I expect to see the linebackers blitzing a little bit more than what we did last year, given the fact that we have such a sound, you know, defensive backfield as far as the secondary corners and our safeties. And obviously we have new personnel as well at the linebacker core. Would you not agree that our linebacker core going into the season is a lot better on paper than it was last year and the year before that and the year before that?
I would agree. I think that there's some options to toy with who at least have more consistency than some of the options that they were looking at in the previous years. They never had a guy like Jameel McClain, who you could feel with confidence is going to be able to step in for John Beeson. Jaquan Williams, Spencer Paysinger are now that much more polished as linebackers than they were in previous years. So, you know, listen, does the group wow me compared to previous years? I wouldn't necessarily say that, but I think the confidence factor is in a better position because you feel, okay, we've got some substance here, and these guys have been through the battlegrounds as opposed to where they were in previous years. Getting back to your point about Robert Ayers, Robert Ayers has been moved around dating back to his days with the Denver Broncos. Last year, he was very good getting to the quarterback. He had 5.5 sacks, and he's pretty good against the run. But Justin Tuck was pretty good against the run, too, Steve. Yeah, at least
I
give him credit. What was Justin Tuck, did the sacks come in batches? Absolutely. But can't you say that about most defensive ends? The sacks really come in bunches. You would have liked to see it earlier in the season, I agree. And some of them were coverage sacks. I understand that. But, you know, I don't know if Robert Ayers is going to take the pass rush to the 10th degree, where he's going to come in and now they're going to go from 34 sacks as a team to 54 just because Robert Ayers is in the mix.
I agree, man. So I think it's going to be a matter of scheme, not necessarily the players. I think with us having such a sound, you know, corners and safeties, I think we're going to, you know, Perry Fewer has a lot more options as far as, you know, the defensive ends don't necessarily have to. We have the linebacking corner give us more support with the run, and we can actually blitz the defensive ends a little bit more. I just think it's going to be scheme-wise. You know, I think that's going to be the biggest difference. Obviously, Ayers, you know, it's pretty comparable to Justin Tuck. But, you know, I just, you know, and I'm hoping that DeMontre Moore steps up this year, too, now that he's healthy and he's talking right. And I think, you know, we're going to get some more production of him. But listen, that's all I had. The last thing I'm going to say before I get off this phone, man, is lift the band on end. I need to end lift the band, man. Come on.
Well, Steve, it's good to know that she has at least one supporter, so I'm happy about that.
Listen, because I'm gonna have to make a point to go to the archives on the Shakedown. I gotta hear it. I can't believe that she actually called it Shakedown, but anyway, buddy, listen, that's all I got today. Thanks for taking my call. Great show, man, and I'll check back with you later on, buddy.
Sounds good, Steve. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513. Let's try to squeeze in a caller or two as we take it to the end of the program. We've got Shane in New York. Shane, welcome to the program. What you got?
I would like to say all the Giants got to do this year, they stepped out. They stepped up big in defense. All they got to do, hand off the ball. They got productive running backs and let the defense mostly take care of it. Don't hand off the ball every time, but, you know, just hand it off more.
Well, you could make the argument that obviously the goal is to have better balance on offense, and the missing ingredient from last year's offense was not having a consistent running game. So with Ben McAdoo now coming in, who's going to have a new scheme and you have new personnel in the backfield, you're probably going to look at 3 and 4 wide receiver sets. I think the goal is, at the end of the day, have better balance and spread the wealth on offense. And if they do that, then this offense is going to be a lot more fluid than it was in previous seasons. So that, to me, is priority number one heading into this year.
Yeah. I like what they did on the defense. I was happy when I saw they got Trendon Holiday and Rashad Jennings. I actually called you and said they should get Rashad Jennings, and then the next day I see that it was signed. I was like, okay.
Well, keep in mind, Shane, on this program, especially during the start of the offseason, we were speculating about which running backs out there would be a good fit for the Giants system. And you, as well as a number of people, you know, Rashad Jennings came up a lot because of his versatility. You want a running back that can catch the ball and can run inside, outside. I think Jennings brings that to the table. And the one thing that Jennings constantly says, more so than I've heard from most backs in this league, complete back. That is the one common phrase that Rashad Jennings is always throwing out there. And you want to be a complete back, especially in the Giants system where pass protection is the number one priority more so than anything else that you could bring to the table.
Yeah. I'm just sitting back hoping, you know, Andre Williams, he gets at least to third or second string, and I really like Ryan Nassib. I want to see him play. He looks good. He fits in a new offense.
Nassib has a great opportunity to solidify that number two spot. Painter was out due to injury. Manning was out due to injury. Who do you think was getting all the reps? It was Ryan Nassib. So he's really ahead of the game compared to the other quarterbacks. They've got to see it, though, during the preseason. That's what it's going to come down to, Shane. Ryan Nassib, he's got to get out there behind an offensive line against NFL talent. He's got to show consistency. He does that, he's going to get that number two job.
I just hope they keep him long enough so that when Eli Manning does decide to retire, he can actually pick it up. I think I believe he's a perfect fit for New York Giants. I know that the New York Giants really hadn't had scrambling quarterbacks, but he can start. He can start there.
Well, and that was one of the benefits that Danny Langsdorf, the quarterbacks coach for the Giants, threw out about Ryan Nassib when he addressed the media. The fact that, you're right, Nassib adds the element of mobility more so than any other quarterback they've had on the roster now or in recent history. So that is something that the Giants are putting value on. But to worry about having a quarterback on the roster, Shane, that's eventually going to take over for Eli Manning, I don't know if they're getting so caught up in that, because at the end of the day, we don't know how many more years Eli Manning is going to play. So you can't really think about, oh, well, we need to keep Nassib just because he could be the guy to replace Eli Manning. You keep Ryan Nassib because he shows you something that he could add to the team as a backup guy as well as a scouting quarterback.
Yeah.
All right,
well, thanks for having me.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. All right, let's end off the show with one more phone call, and we go to Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, just give me about 30 seconds, man. First off, man, to Steve, if you listen. Hey, man, we ain't got no beef, man. You cool. We ain't going to agree on Eli, man, but we cool. I ain't got no beef with you. So I just want to say that to Steve. And lastly, man, just a quick comment. With regards to all of the hype, or, you know, everybody hoping that Adrian Robinson come through, I just think it's a hope and prayer since we need a tight end.
Well, it could be,
that's it.
But you know what? It's not as if anybody else outside of Adrian Robinson is wowing anybody. So it's fair then to say Adrian Robinson could turn out to be a bright spot, just as anybody else I could throw out as well. I don't think it's a stretch. Well, I understand that people are trying to dig deep and you're looking for a tight end, but the common question right now is who's going to win the starting tight end job. And when you look at all of the guys on the roster, you know, the veterans that they brought in haven't necessarily been big weapons on their previous stops. And then you look at Larry Donnell and Adrian Robinson, two young guys. You know, if you pick Adrian Robinson out of the group, you're taking a guess just as anybody else is.
Well, I'll say this. I do agree with that. And I also, personally, I hope that, you know, Adrian Robinson is our savior, because we do need a tight end really, really bad. And, you know, and once again, it gets back to my question of, you know, is Tom going to actually start playing these guys now? But I don't want to take up too much of your time, because I called in earlier. I did just want to give that shout out to Steve.
I'm glad you did call in, because I was worried Steve wasn't going to be able to sleep well at night, Drew. So the fact that you called it makes me feel good now, Drew. I appreciate that. All right, Drew,
man.
You got it. Have a good one. We don't want any bad blood between our respective fan base and our respective callers. So, Steve, now hearing it from Drew in Virginia, there's no beef, there's no hostility across Big Blue Nation. Getting back to the point about Adrian Robinson, and it's a good segue to when I'm back on Monday. Paul DeTito will be hosting on Friday, but what I wanted to talk in great detail on Monday's show, because as I mentioned to you, for the shows I'm here, I want to go position by position. I was actually going to turn to tight end on Monday, because of all the positions, of all the conversations to have, it's by far the most intriguing one. Why? Because we really don't know what's going to happen with that position compared to any other spot. And I know a number of you have thoughts on Adrian Robinson, and a number of you, I'm sure, have thoughts on any of the other tight ends. But when you question, you know, why is there so much hype? Why is there so much chatter about Adrian Robinson? I think it has to do with what Drew mentioned. It has to do with Steve and a number of you on Twitter. When you look at the group right now, if there's any name that you'd get behind to say has potential, has upside, I don't blame anybody for getting behind Adrian Robinson. No offense to Daniel Fells and Kellen Davis, but they're veterans. They've been around the block. They've been on a few teams. You know what you're going to get out of them. You're going to get a guy that's going to know the playbook. He's going to go out there. He's going to make plays. He's going to block. Is he going to be a game changer, though? I don't know about that. Could Adrian Robinson be a game changer? Hey, it's possible. Is it a stretch right now? Is it a guess right now? Absolutely. But that's why people are turning more so to Adrian Robinson than some of the other guys. Because Adrian Robinson has that unknown factor that the other tight ends don't necessarily bring with them. And the unknown can be dangerous at the same time. I understand a number of you are growing impatient with Adrian Robinson. Listen, the organization too. They want to see this guy develop. They want to get some return on the draft pick. But do want to get into that a little bit next week. And also as we move forward with some other positions. Great dialogue, as usual, with respect to the wide receivers. I'll try to address some of the tweets that I did not have an opportunity to read out on the air, off the air, when I get a moment over the next few hours. And the archive will be up a little bit later on here on Giants.com. So if you missed any part of Big Blue Kickoff Live, make sure you check out our website for the latest. There's also some content that we're putting up. Steve touched on that early in the program, didn't necessarily give us a pat on the back. I will give ourselves a pat on the back. We are putting up some new content over the next few weeks. We're going to have a segment, 20 questions in 20 days, which will identify a lot of the subjects and topics that you've brought up on this program. So stay tuned for that. And there were a few mailbag questions that I have answered, which will be put up over the last few weeks, as well as some video content. We'll try to bring you the freshest content as possible to get you set for a training camp, because we still got a few weeks. So we've got to keep the dialogue going, keep the conversation moving, and the Giants fan base certainly does a great job of doing that. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern. As I mentioned, I am done for the week. Paul DeTino will be in tomorrow. I'll be back on Monday and Tuesday of next week. Hope to chat with you. Hope to go back and forth with you starting next week. Enjoy the weekend. We will talk soon. As this is Big Blue Kickoff Live here on a Thursday, Lance Meadows signing off on Giants.com.